Holy smokes, it's September already. Your September 20th Committee on Rules. We're expecting the good Senator Johnson shortly. She had some transportation issues. Hopefully Senator Farioli will join us. I would like to have Dr. Lisa Dodson come up, and we'll open a public hearing on the Health Services Commission. Good morning. How are you this morning?
Thank you. Good morning.
Would you please state your name for the record and then tell us a little bit about why you'd like to serve on the Health Services Commission?
My name is Lisa Grill Dodson. I'm a family physician at Oregon Health Sciences University and the director of the Area Health Education Centers program. And my practice experience is in John Day. I practiced there for 7 years after residency. I also, at that was beginning in 1992. And was in the very early days of the Oregon Health Plan experience in rural Oregon particularly. I also served on the board of directors of the what was then called the Central Oregon IPA, which was really one of the first managed care contracting organizations for Eastern Oregon and rural Oregon. So I had some of the early experience with dealing with the Oregon Health Plan, and have not had a lot of dealing with the Health Services Corps Services Commission component of it, but have a strong interest in both rural health care, but predominantly care to underserved populations in general. And my current practice is broad spectrum family medicine, only 2 days a week, but I do see children, I see pregnant women. I do a lot of obstetrical care, geriatric care, hospice management. So a broad range of services that apply to the Oregon Health Plan population. So I have an interest in that. And I previously served on the Board of Medical Examiners and had a little break and decided it was time to get back into doing something public service. So here I am.
Great. Questions? I knew. Senator Montes-Anderson, take it away.
No, I don't really have a question, but what I am thrilled about with having you be here is, first of all, you're a woman. Second of all, you're from rural Oregon, and you have that perspective and experience that I think will be so valuable. Mm-hmm. So thank you so very much for being willing to take this position.
Certainly my pleasure.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, and thank you for agreeing to do this. I'm asking just about every medical person that I know, what do you think of managed care, why it works and why it doesn't work, where does it work, why it doesn't work?
Managed care in general?
Yeah.
I think managed care as it existed in the 90s is pretty much dying or dead, and I think the reasons for that were, in my opinion, largely because it was a very business-driven decision, not a medically-driven decision. One of the things that became very clear during the managed care era at the beginning was that healthcare providers were not good managers. And we were not trained in business models, and we don't talk the same language. And I, in the early years of my career, sort of believed if you just shouted louder, it would make everybody understand my viewpoint as a physician. And what I learned was that, no, it was a different language, and it's sort of like screaming at somebody who speaks Chinese. It just doesn't work. So I actually sort of learned some skills around business, and I think that managed care needs to be a better partnership between people who understand and deliver health care and people who understand and deliver economic systems. And trying to get the two together is really the trick, because they really are quite different culturally. So, you know, I think that we're doing better. I think more physicians are learning about the business part of it and about managed care. You can certainly argue till we're all blue in the face whether healthcare is a right or a privilege or anything in between, but I think that ultimately the cost to society of not providing healthcare is way too high in many, many ways besides just economic. And so I think we've got to work together with politicians and people who perform public policy, make public policy decisions, as well as the business community and the medical community need to get better organized at trying to figure out systems rather than having these kind of disparate systems trying to interact with one another. I don't know if that answers your question or not, but...
Senator Edmonds Anderson and I were having this discussion yesterday with Senator Morris about... Mm-hmm. How do we take care of the healthcare problems? It's the hidden gorilla, not the hidden gorilla. It is the gorilla.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I think that, you know, my opinion as a citizen is that we need to take care of everybody. I mean, you know, basic health care services are so essential. People cannot be employed. They cannot take care of their families if they're drug addicted or if they're, you know, chronically ill or have any number of things that we don't necessarily take particularly good care of right now. So, on the other side, I've seen the policy end of it, and you don't have unlimited funds to deal with. And so you've got to, that's one of the things I'm really a advocate of the Oregon Health Plan for, is I think it is not a perfect system, but it's one of the better systems at least trying to define the concept of making sure that basic services are covered for as many people as we possibly can. And I remember being around in the early days of the Oregon Health Plan and the rationing argument, you know, saying, well, we can't ration health care, and that's why the Oregon Health Plan is unethical. And it just seems so illogical to me to say we ration health care all the time. We just do it.
Whether or not you have a dollar in
exactly.
your pocket to pay for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so it's like, well, at least it's a rational way to do it to me, and that at least is a starting point.
So what changes would you make the Oregon Health Plan, public health care? I mean, I think we're very committed, hopefully in a bipartisan way, in the legislature to making sure every child is covered in the state, and I suspect we can pretty much do that. I mean, that's a very accomplishable goal. You know, next step, how do you provide a basic level of health care to folks without insurance? Do we look at the Massachusetts model? You know, where do we go? What are your thoughts? If you were queen, what would you do?
Queen for a day. There's some things I really like about the Massachusetts model. Oregon's a unique place in many ways, and it's sometimes challenging to. I went to medical school in New York, and taking East Coast models and translating it to a large a state with a large rural population and a huge land mass, I think there's some things that I understand on my limited understanding of the Massachusetts plan that probably wouldn't work in a state this large with as many places as we you know, have to get off to in the senator's area. But so I mean, it's a very long question. I suspect you don't want a long answer, but I think that the rational way to approach it, again, I like the public comment portion of the Oregon Health Plan. I think that I've come to a better understanding that health care, in spite of my physician's belief that everybody should have everything, you know, when you're talking to one patient in front of you, that's your natural tendency. But I also understand the policy need to really involve the state in very complicated and difficult decision making around new technology, I think, is going to be a huge issue. It's so expensive, and I am continuously sort of appalled and horrified by what healthcare costs. So if I were able to wave a magic wand, I think getting to the cost of healthcare, not, you know, why do things cost what they cost, and what can we do to work on, you know, why does an MRI, which is not now new technology, cost as much as it does, and what can we do to sort of bridge the gap between these really exorbitant costs for care to some similar to what's happening in the drug industry, you know, sort of group purchasing models of sort of how you can deliver services to groups of people in a way that lowers costs, rather than approaching it on the sort of N of one person, one individual physician. It goes against the grain of every physician hates those discussions, because we're very, very much trained in the you are my patient and I am responsible for your care model. But the public health side of it, really, you know, sort of looking broadly is more important right now, I think.
Okay. Well, Senator Monica Sanderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, there's 600,000 that aren't insured, and that's growing. Employers are dropping insurance. Mm-hmm. Over 100,000 of those 600,000 are children. And I won't put you on the spot now, but what I would...
we will later.
Go ahead. I really would like the Health Commission to start looking at what... about mandating health care insurance, and but it would have to be at a reasonable cost, and I think that there are ways to do that. But I was on MAX traveling from Portland back to Gresham, and sat down next to about a 28-year-old, and we started talking about health care, and she doesn't have health insurance, but she says, And I said, well, what about mandate? Oh, yeah, if you mandated it, yeah, I'd do it. It's just that, you know, I don't have to have it, and I'm well and all that. Because, like you said, we have to deal with the costs. And the costs are horrendous, and we're just cost-shifting. So if we can get more into the pool, so to speak, mm-hmm. that should help. And then if we can address the utilization rate, which is, you know, we need to start getting back to evidence-based practices and use utilization rules or caps or whatever based on evidence-based practices. So I think there's a lot that we can do, but I would like the Health Commission to start thinking about mandated health care insurance.
Well, if I were queen for the day, as Senator Brown says, that's one of the certainly one of the things I think that caused the some of the problems that we're seeing with the Oregon Health Plan right now was the employer mandates that were kind of originally built in didn't really ever take place. And so,
well, I think they were repealed
for a variety of reasons. Yeah, I'm not sure why it didn't happen, but I know it didn't. And I think that is certainly not, I suspect that is not within the purview of the Oregon Health Services Commission to mandate that, but I also believe, I'm an educator, I teach at the medical school for a reason, and I think that physician education is dramatically changing, both at the level of what we teach our students and residents, but also the way that we are delivering continuing education now is really changing, at least in my field of family medicine. We now have to do something every year in a maintenance of certification process, and it's very complicated. And I only bring that up because I think that re-educating physicians around utilization and other issues, which has really not been a focus, even during managed care, it was kind of done on an administrative level. You know, it was like the frustration that a lot of physicians have is you call up on and you get the sense that you're talking to somebody who doesn't, you know, understand healthcare, and they're denying services to your patient, you know, and that's always sort of the sense that we have as physicians. So I think educating physicians better about what the Health Commission is doing and how that's going to affect their day-to-day work is certainly an area that, as a practicing physician, I think could be improved. So it may help with some of those issues.
And just one last little thing. We are, you know, if you read the Oregonian on Sunday, there was a huge article on how physicians are using money that the legislature had allocated with the sole intent of helping those physicians in rural Oregon. And the intent was to address the malpractice costs in OBGYN and our family practice physicians. So we are definitely going to be re-looking at that. And I'm not sure if the Health Commission can really provide a lot of information. Oh, I would hope that they would give some input on that, because we are going to have to address that. That's so unacceptable.
Yeah. Well, as a
rural physician,
House Bill 3630 was implemented in a way that many of us felt there was going to be some problems with, based on the broadness of it, I think. Mm-hmm. I think the intention was excellent. I think there is a malpractice crisis going on in rural Oregon, particularly around obstetrical access, and I am passionately committed to training residents and students to provide those services, so it's something I care about a lot. As a policy decision, I don't know exactly how it was implemented, but there certainly were some things in there that some of us who are involved in rural health care thought might come up and bite us later. My hope is that it doesn't get lumped together with other, what I believe to be highly successful rural programs, such as the rural tax credit, which mm-hmm. I hope everybody understands is a separate issue and really has, we think, done a good job at keeping the truly rural physicians in their practices and providing a broader spectrum of services. So I don't think it's unsalvageable. I think there are some good things in there, and I think we just need to clean it up a little bit. I don't know if the Health Service Commission can have a role in that, other than I think they should have a role in access issues for children and pregnant women particularly.
Go ahead, Senator Nelson.
Just to thank you for your work in the area of health education centers. It's one of the unsung success stories. And nobody talks about it because it's so successful. So
yeah,
we shouldn't lose sight of it because it really helps, I think, the entire state. And I thank you for your
Thank you for that. We appreciate it.
I want to change topics a little bit. I participated yesterday in testimony in front of the Oregon Supreme Court about diversity training for lawyers. And Saturday there was a huge discussion about whether the Oregon State Bar should continue the affirmative action. And I'm just curious as to what diversity or elimination of bias or however you want a multicultural training are part of the, is it MCLE? I don't know what the medical continuum education is called. Is it MCE?
CME.
CME, same thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So just curious as to whether there's any sort of required diversity affirmative action training as part of the medical community's continuing education.
For practicing physicians, I don't believe any of the specialties have any requirements. I mean, certainly at the level of the medical school we do. We actually increasingly spend a fair amount of time talking about diversity issues in all its many forms through the medical school curriculum and through residency. I don't believe any of the practice specialty groups require diversity training per se. A lot of that is done through AHEC because of my work with AHEC nationally. We are almost all AHECs are involved in treating underserved populations, which of course by unfortunately, definition almost includes diverse populations preferentially. And so we see a lot of training through those programs, and I do that. But I don't think at the continuing education level that there's any requirements that I'm aware of.
Okay. Thank you. Sarah Johnson, any questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. We really appreciate you joining us. We're this is sort of our outreach in terms of boards and commissions. We're asking folks to come down, and so we get an opportunity to meet them, interview them, and hopefully develop a better working relationship with we just have an incredible number of folks serving on boards and commissions. So thank you for your willingness to do this.
My pleasure. Thank you for letting me be here.
Anybody else wishing to testify on Dr. Dodson's appointment to the Oregon Health Services Commission? You're off the hook. Thank you very much. We're going to close that public hearing. We're going to open public hearing on the LUBA Land Use Board of Appeals. And why don't you come on forward, Ms. Ryan. Good morning and welcome. Thanks for your patience. Tell us, state your name for the record and tell us a little bit about why you want to do this particular job.
Thank you. My name is Melissa Ryan, and I wanted to thank you, Chair Brown, and members of the Rules Committee for inviting me to appear before you regarding my appointment. It's an honor for me to be appointed to LUBA. And it's also quite humbling because, in my experience, LUBA serves a very important function in our state in providing consistency and efficiency in resolving land use issues. I'll just tell you a little bit about myself and my legal background. I want to state for the record that I have never been a resident of Oklahoma. I have been a resident of Oregon for 9 years, moving initially to Hood River from Wyoming in 1997 to complete my third year of law school as a visiting student at Lewis and Clark. And since becoming a member of the Oregon Bar in 1998, I have practiced in the private sector, both for a large firm and most recently a medium-sized firm in Portland. During that time, my practice has mainly involved representing property owners, purchasers, and developers, and also lenders in connection with real estate and loan transactions. And I've been really fortunate in both of the firms that I've worked for to represent very sophisticated and professional clients. I wanted to just give you a couple of examples of some of the work that I've done. A couple of years ago, I represented a corporate owner of a large hop farm in the Willamette Valley in its sale of the farm to another operating hop farm, which was a family farm. And incidentally, I was recently traveling south on I-5 just south of Salem, and I saw two large trucks with the Family Farms logo, and they were filled to the brim with hops, and I was just really pleased that I contributed in a small way to the viability of that family farm and also to Oregonians enjoying its products. And I've also represented various lenders in affordable housing transactions and in commercial development transactions, both inside and outside of UGBs. And I've also represented developers of urban, mixed-use residential, and commercial buildings. Now, all of these real estate deals involved land use issues to varying degrees and of varying complexity, because really every real estate development ultimately involves just people wanting to build a building and needing to comply with building, zoning, and other land use regulations. And I think my experience representing clients in the private sector will bring a really unique perspective to LUBA. While litigation or land use experience might be a plus, being a good and thoughtful lawyer, I think, is most important at the end of the day. And again, I'm honored to be appointed. And this concludes my statement, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Sarah Nelson, any questions?
There's probably a ton of questions. Major 37.
Do you want to think for a minute? Anybody else? Sarah Johnson?
No.
Okay. Sarah Monison.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Affordable housing is a huge issue, but I'm not sure that LUBA gets involved much with that. I don't know. Do you know? You may know more about what the...
Not in the specific context of affordable housing, but to the extent that a development is, essentially approved or denied at the local level due to land use regulations or zoning issues, we would see that.
It's a huge issue in area that the federal government's cut a lot of money to very, very significantly needy families in this state. And so we as a state have to pull up our boots and try to address that issue. So that is one of those issues that I hope that the legislature will deal with. So who knows if you in an indirect way will be involved or not.
Sarah Nelson?
I guess just the comments I hear from people in my district about businesses take so darn long to site a place or to get something going, and that we had a plan, I can't remember what it was, a trailer plan or something like that, was going to settle in someplace in Umatilla County, but they ended up actually going to Sparks, Nevada, just because they could get their plan up and running in about 6 months, where it was like a 2-year process, although the governor in the last go around helped out with another trailer plan out there and did his fast, the fast track siting process. So, I mean, if we in the state of Oregon are going to prosper and grow, we're going to have to get these businesses in there. As I understand it, they love it when they get to Oregon, but it's just jumping through all the hoops. So I don't know. I'm just passing on things that I've heard. So if you want to comment on that, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine.
Well, I definitely, will take that. I take notice of that. And I do think that one of the smart things the legislature did when it created LUBA was to implement a pretty fast-track timeline for those appeals, and I know that it doesn't seem fast to the developer. Believe me, I know that because I've had to explain to developers, that. But I think you're probably an attorney, and you're maybe familiar with the length that a real court case, length of time that can take. So, it is pretty efficient for, what happens.
Sarah Johnson.
In your work at Dunkarney, has the firm handled many 37 claims?
I think that there are two, possibly three claims that other lawyers in the firm might be handling. But they're obviously at the circuit court level because those claims do go to circuit court. And I think it's Multnomah County and Washington County.
I think we've covered all the questions, unless Senator Farioli has any. We really appreciate it. You must have grown up in Wyoming.
No, I actually grew up in Wisconsin, Wyoming.
All right. I didn't hear it in your. I didn't hear a Midwest accent in your voice. Okay.
I was a ski bum. I confess. That's how I got to Wyoming. So.
And what brought you to Hood River?
Well, windsurfing and Lewis and Clark, actually.
You're in the right place. Yeah, all right. Well, thank you, and we'll keep you apprised of this process.
Thank
I don't
you.
Know how much Nancy had walked you through the process, but we'll determine your appointment here, and then we'll go to the Senate floor. So,
thank you so much.
Thank you. Anybody else wishing to testify on Ms. Ryan's appointment to the Land Use Board of Appeals? That we're going to close the public hearing and open a public hearing on Jack Mills' appointment to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. Mr. Mills, come on forward. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. For the record, I'm Jock Mills. I'm here as a nominee for the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. In my professional career, you know me as the Director of Government Relations for Oregon State University. The reason I've put myself forward for this appointment, and I greatly appreciate the opportunity to come before you and the appointment to this position, is that if you look through my resume and the work that I've done, I've had a fair number of public policy positions throughout my career, a number of volunteer positions that I've served, and presently I'm not doing that in terms of time that I have, and this is an opportunity to serve the public on this important board. If you look at my background, I, in terms of having school-aged children and experiencing what my kids have gone through in school, the fact that I have one kid who's in special needs kid and another kid who's in an accelerated program, I have a real appreciation for what teachers and the education system does for them. In terms of being an administrator at OSU, I also see a number of the need to be able to deal with employment situations fairly and effectively. So I see both sides of the equation associated with this appointment. And other than that, I'm happy to answer any questions you have regarding my appointment.
Hi. Questions for Mr. Mills?
We've got a lot of questions.
I am employed by a Pac-10 institution, and will bring fairness and equity into this position.
But not necessarily quality officiating.
All right, I think you're off the hook in terms of questions. So thank you, Mr. Mills. We appreciate you being here. Anybody else wishing to testify on Mr. Mills' appointment to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board? Seeing no takers, we're going to close the public hearing. All right. Ms. Nielsen, if we could have you get Mr. Polvey and Mr. Wolf, who's apparently in Alaska, on the phone, that would be most appreciated. Some of you might recall the familiar face of Ms. Nielsen, who went on to higher places and is now running our library upstairs, and she's filling in for our dearth of committee assistants during the interim. So we're delighted to have her back, and I do think that putting her in the library is perfect.
Yeah, we haven't heard from James about his work in Hawaii. James Golding took off to be a tour guide in Hawaii.
Are you serious?
It's perfect.
That's very funny.
It's perfect.
So what did Mr. Dempsey think of your cookies?
He liked the tea cookies.
Okay.
And the lime ones are very limey. Either you like lime or you don't.
No.
That's
pretty
funny.
Ryan Wolf. Yeah, he's actually been a little... Oh, it's way early in Alaska.
What's he doing in Alaska?
I don't know. We'll find out.
So this is going to rain.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. Nina Sabata, Hispanic Affairs. I was very impressed with Dr. Dodson. I really like her. She should be a good addition.
Great. When we get to Kenny Dovias.
Dovias.
Okay. Dovias.
Okay. Thank you. I'm trying to keep this all in order.
Did you see that Ms. Ryan, the last attorney, was ordering the clerk number one and we lost?
Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is this Ms. Sabata?
Sabota,
okay. This is Kate Brown. I'm chair of the Rules Committee, and you now have a full complement of Senate Rules Committee members, Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Farrioli, myself, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Manas Anderson. We would just like you to state your name for the record and tell us a little bit about yourself and why you'd like to serve on the Commission on Hispanic Affairs.
Okay, my name is Nina Sabota, and I live in Stanfield, Oregon, and I work as a correctional counselor at Two Rivers Correctional Institution. And let's see, I've gone through numerous hoops to get to a place where I think I could be an advocate to certain populations, especially minorities. And so I hold an MSW now, and I'm working towards getting my license in social work. And so I think it's important to be well informed about different things that happen in the community or in your region, and then be able to voice what the need is. And so hence that's where my interest lies in being on this committee.
Great. Questions for Ms. Sabota. Senator Manas Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was very interested in your little paragraph that you wrote talking about your background and where mental illness had controlled your life since you were 5 years of age because of your father being paranoid schizophrenic. And, you know, health is my background, and mental illness is an area that I think that the state is finally going to take some direction in trying to cover that. And we certainly, it's too bad that you can't serve on Health Commission too, but we need to be sure that when you're a part of the Hispanic Affairs Commission, that the health needs that are in the Hispanic population be addressed too, and somehow share those needs in and direct activity toward either legislators or commissions that can actually address those. But thank you for being so open with what has been going on in your life.
Well, thank you very much. I think that that's a lot of the times people who experience some form of trauma or experience some kind of deficit in their life, they're usually the people that are not heard, either because of stigma or because they're not well-informed. So, you know, they become the unheard population, and so therefore they end up suffering, and they don't get some of the services that they deserve. And I agree with you that, you know, the mental health issue has become quite, you know, a financial strain on the state, but it has also become, you know, personal wars with families, because they don't know what else to do, how to access, you know, healthcare, how to access prescription drugs that keep these people at a baseline. And so then you're having hospitals filled with individuals who are having acute mental status experiences, you know. And so then what do? I mean, I also work at a hospital, and I see that as well. And so it all ties together. So thank you for recognizing that.
Thanks, Senator Nelson.
Yes,
sir. Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you, Nina. I appreciate the fact you're willing to serve. You know, in our area, I'm the senator from out in that district, and uh-huh. and you know, I know that there are a fair amount of issues now starting to arise, particularly amongst the Hispanic population.
Sure.
You know, the most specific one is the issue that's going on down at Three Mile Farm and unions and the farm, and now they've come to an agreement, and now there's more allegations going on there. I just Do you have any suggestions or any thoughts on, you know, what we ought to be doing to kind of diffuse that situation and say, how do we get along and get on with the world?
You know, oftentimes, it goes back to the piece of communication and understanding the culture and what is, you know, what is happening within the community and how these people actually feel. Oftentimes, there's a push and pull it's a push and pull system that goes on between people. You know, we want to listen, but we don't have any money, and this is what we need, and give us this. And oftentimes, you know, it's coming to the table as a group of interested individuals that are being affected on both sides, and be able to communicate. And oftentimes, when you have people that aren't of the same culture or aren't of the same background or don't understand, it's hard to communicate. It's hard to have an understanding. But, I used to work for Oregon Legal Services, and one of the things that I found out was that having been raised as a migrant child, you know, and then having to go back as an adult and seeing farmers and farm workers and all this and that, you know, that's an example of how I was able to, as an adult, be able to piece it all together. And oftentimes that's not what happens, you know, with a mental illness, a farm worker issue, methamphetamines, you know, you see that happening throughout your community, and then it's, what do we do? And the first question is always about money, and, you know, and it's unfortunate because there's some creative things that we can do to be able to alleviate some of that stuff.
Yeah. Sarah Nelson.
Yeah, follow up. You might contact Art Hill at Blue Mountain Community College. I don't know if you know him or not.
Who's that?
Art Hill.
Okay.
He is has created a Spanish-speaking program at Three Mile Farm, and he wants to expand it to the other members of the Hispanic community and the white community in the Stanfield-Hermiston area. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of the fellow that he has as his instructor. I think it's Jose, and I can't think of his last name, but Art Hill at Blue Mountain Community College, I think, would just be a great contact for you, and just to let him know you're on the commission, and if make some contacts, because I know that the community college is really working hard to try and bridge that gap and increase that communication, as you suggest.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Senator Johnson.
I just want to explore a little bit about your philosophy of governance with respect to sitting on one of the commissions. The commissions have had a kind of rocky history in recent times, including struggling with governance and appropriate management of assets. And whether or not you have any particular philosophy of the role of the commission in terms of information you should be requiring of staff, outreach into the Hispanic community, relationship with the legislature, policy versus operations, those sorts of really role of the commission kind of questions, and whether or not you've given thought to those issues with respect to this appointment.
You know, I received my bachelor's in sociology from Whitman College, and I'll tell you what, that was probably the best education I received, because in it, my sociology chair had us read the book Street Level Bureaucracies, and in it, it talks about lack of funding, you know, lack of time, employees, staff, those kinds of things, and management. And, you know, I think that because of my background, having been raised poor, having been raised Hispanic female in, you know, in an American culture, you know, and having to work as hard as I did to get my education, I value the fact that, you know, you have to make sure that you stay on that straight road, that, you know, that you sit on a committee or you become a senator and you're in the public eye, and that you do things, you know, where you're going to stay safe, and that you are going to be able to look at people in the eye, and they're going to know that you, as an individual, are a great representative, that, you know, you're not going to go over here and steal from citizens or take away from the pot that doesn't have very much, because as, you know, I sit on this committee, my job is going to be, you know, to make sure that at least for myself and the ethical standards that I have, that I am able to be keep myself in that area where, okay, this is ethical and this is not. And if I see some of the behaviors that oftentimes cripple a committee, then I'm very strong in voicing my opinion about that, because I don't want to be a part of things that are negative. And that's not to say that, you know, sometimes, you know, there's situations where ethically it may be a wrong thing to do, but it's kind of like the right thing to do, or vice versa. But those kinds of things are things that you have to really sit and look at your own personal standards, the state of Oregon standards, the commission's mission, you know, the philosophy. I've always tried to be very honest, because that's the way I was raised, and that's the way I was able to earn all the things that I've earned.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Ms. Sabota, we think you're off the hook at this point. We really appreciate your time and your willingness to serve on this commission, and Governor's office will be in touch about the next step in the process.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your time this morning.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Yeah, I assume facilities. Okay.
Do you
want
to go back to them?
Yeah. Was he going to call when she got him?
I was just calling back.
Okay, let's do that so we don't keep him waiting, right? We're going to go back up to the energy, close the public hearing on Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and go back to the Energy Facility Siting Council. We're looking for Mr. Jacob Polvey, and we're trying to get a hold of Mr. Wolf, who is in Alaska. So, anybody wishing to testify on these two appointments to the Energy Facility Siting Council? No. Okay. Anybody wishing to testify on the Commission on Hispanic Affairs?
Yes, I have Mr.
No. Okay.
I'd rather look at your limp at heifers. But
yes, this is the Senate Rules Committee calling for Mr. Wolf. Okay, I just one moment while I set up the conference call, please.
Where's the list of new appointments? Okay. You've showed me the list of new appointments, but all but one are under the... from Eastern Oregon.
Oh, yeah.
This is the
list.
Oh, wow. One, two...
Yes, so this is the Senate Rules Committee, Mr. Polvey. Can you... great. Could you hold on my safety conference, please?
What is
good morning. Is this Mr. Wolf?
Hello.
Hello.
We've got Mr. Wolf and Mr. Polvey.
Yes.
Let's have, I know that Mr. Polvey's kind of been through this before. Mr. Wolf, I understand you're in Alaska.
Yes, ma'am.
You're in front of the Senate Rules Committee. You're being piped throughout the Capitol, and you've got a full complement of senators here. Senators Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Farrioli, myself, Kate Brown, the chair, Senator David Nelson, and Senator Lori Montes Anderson. Could you tell us, state your name for the record, and just tell us a little bit about why you're interested in sitting on the Energy Facility Siting Council?
My name is William Brian Wolf. I go by Brian, and I have been involved in energy issues throughout the last 10, 12 years as a director of Unitil Electric Co-op, and as such have been become involved in these issues, and find them very interesting, very fascinating, and would like to offer any of my talents, if I have any, I guess, to try to try to provide some thoughts and input and ideas, and to work with those of us in our state to work for the future, because what we are doing now is for our children and grandchildren, because any decision you make today, the fruits of that decision will bear in 5, 10, 20, 50 years. So that's just want to try to make a difference for the future.
Mr. Polby?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Good. How are you this morning?
Excellent.
Would you state your name for the record and tell us why you'd like to be on the Energy Facility Siting Council? It's my recollection that you formerly served on the Plumbing Board, so this would be quite a switch for you.
Yes, it will be. This is Jake Polley. I'm from Bend, Oregon, and I'm excited to be part of the Energy Council because I think I can use my technical skills as a civil engineer to assist the council and help Oregonians.
All right. Questions for the committee?
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. One for Mr. Wolf. Mr. Wolf, as I understand from your credentials that you submitted, you're still serving on the co-op board?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you comment at all about any perception of conflict of interest with respect to your service on the board as well as deliberations on the Energy Facility Siting Council?
Well, I would hope that there would not be too many times. I would anticipate that there could be a time or two that I would need to declare a potential conflict of interest and recluse myself from any discussion or votes because of Umatilla Electric and our territory, but I think that would be very minimal, and but I would not have a problem if there was ever a hint of being a potential conflict of interest. I wouldn't have a problem with that, Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to get that on the record because I think sometimes with these boards that are dealing with somewhat contentious issues periodically, that at least having your clear articulation of a willingness to recuse yourself and the awareness of conflict, it's good to have that on the record.
Anybody else? Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. And good morning there, Brian.
Good morning, Senator.
You are just enjoying Alaska, I hope.
From the confines of the hotel for meetings, yes, sir.
What meeting you're at, anyway? I didn't realize you were traveling all over the state, all over the country.
I did have an interesting deal last night to attend for the committee's benefit. I had a tour of the world's largest battery, and it is here in Fairbanks. It can generate 27 megawatts for over 5 minutes, and it's one whale of a impressive situation, I'll tell you that.
My life is incomplete.
I appreciate the fact you're willing to serve and to take on this job, because I think the energy issue is just going to be huge and how we're going to move forward, and I appreciate your willingness to lend your skills to that this particular council.
Anybody else? I think the both of you are off the hook. We really appreciate Mr. Polby, Mr. Wolf, your willingness to take time out of your busy schedule to join us this morning and also serve on this particular council. And the governor's office will be in touch about your status. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Senator.
Take care.
Thank you all. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
I thought that was the hang-up button. Okay. Where's she going next?
Maritime Pilots.
Maritime Pilots?
Where's the next one?
Devias.
Yes.
Devias. Okay. Kenneth Devias will be next up. While we're in recess, we're not really in recess, while Ms. Nielsen is getting us the next person that we're going to grill, I did want to point out for the record that of the 10 new appointments, 6 are from either Central or Eastern Oregon, greatly diversifying our boards and commissions. And Ms. Gostaran deserves our applause and kudos, and as well as the others working in the governor's office to make sure that the boards and commissions reflect the many faces of Oregon. So. And actually, it would be seven if you counted Dr. Dodson, who lived in John Day for almost 10 years. She should be given extra credit for that, don't you think, Senator Farrielli?
Actually, for returning to the West Side, she should be giving giving extra credit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is this Mr. Devias?
Yes.
Did I get your name right?
Yes, you did. Thank you. That's a rarity.
We've been practicing. This is Kate Brown, and you're in front of the Senate Rules Committee. You're being piped throughout the Capitol, so though I hate to tell you this, there's not a huge room full of participants this morning. You do get a full complement of state senators, Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Farrielli, myself, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Lori Montes Anderson, who's probably your state senator. So would you tell us, state your name for the record, and tell us like why you would like to serve on this particular board?
Sure. My name is Kenny Devias, and I'm a lifetime Oregon resident, born and raised here in Portland area. Married 18 years and have two children. Presently employed with a steamship company, K-Line America. I've been involved with the steamship industry for 15 years or so. My main responsibilities are operating the vessels that come and go into the Columbia River and the Oregon coast, the Coos Bay area, and my job is to effectively get those in and out in a timely, cost-effective manner. And over the years, I have I've dealt with pilotage in many different instances, and I think that my experience would be a benefit to the board.
Great. Question, Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your willingness to serve. Given that my district runs the length of the Columbia from the mouth to the confluence, I have watched this board with some interest. There have been some fiscal management issues with the board, and if you could just speak a little bit to your opinion about the role of the board in assuring the fiscal integrity of the agency, I would appreciate having your comments.
Well, that is a big issue. The Columbia River is an expensive port when you look at the coast-wide issue in specific pilots, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's over 100-mile river transit, so it's not a simple ocean two-hour trip up to a port. So the costs are often looked at by principals that operate steamships. And when they see a cost as large as we see here in the Columbia River, it's hard to explain. So I've seen that over the years, and I've addressed that with my companies, and it's one of those instances where the cost is justified with the time the pilots are on there. But at the same time, I think there are areas of perhaps consolidation of pilotage grounds or looking at the transit system for boarding vessels where costs can be reduced, and that's something that I look forward to being a part of on the board.
I appreciate that answer. I perhaps didn't ask my question with enough specificity, and let me take another try. Setting aside the costs of calling at the port, what I really want to know is about the management of the agency. This agency is right now embedded in ODOT. There have been some questions about the fiscal integrity of the agency, how well managed the agency is, and I'm just curious about your comments with respect to how you see the role of the board in the oversight of agency operations.
Well, I guess when you say agency, are you referring to the pilot grounds themselves?
No, I'm referring to the Board of Maritime Pilots that has a budget that's approved by the legislature, has a manager, Ms. Johnson. And the question about how you see the role of the board in assuring that the Board of Maritime Pilots is responsive both to ODOT and to the legislature in terms of managing their fiscal affairs appropriately.
Yeah, it's something that is very important. I do see that. The board itself, the makeup, I understand, is it's nine members, so three public, three private, and then three pilots. So that's something that the board should take very, very seriously and the costs associated with that. As far as the board answering to ODOT, that's something that's important as well.
Well, the last that I had any awareness, ODOT was in the process of doing an audit of board activities, and I don't know whether that audit has been completed. I probably ought to know that, but just to make sure that you're aware of the fact that there had been some questions with respect to the management of the Board of Maritime Pilots, and that ODOT was undertaking a fiscal review. And to commend that review, if it's completed, to you for your study and perhaps edification as you come onto the board.
Sure, yeah. I was not aware of that, but I'd certainly like to see that and address it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Anybody else?
Just a quick question.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. I live up on the upper reaches of close to the Columbia, up around Pendleton, Hermiston, that area. The Columbia River is a big issue from my viewpoint. And I know it's going to be, it affects the whole spectrum of the river. I'm advocating greater use of the Columbia River, and I'm just wondering from your personal and practical viewpoint of the size, power, volume, use of the Columbia River, do you have any particular thoughts on the multi-use of that water?
Well, it is a large river, and my experience, it stops at Portland because my ships, they can't go any farther. But there's certainly
that is music to my ears.
A lot of commodities that go to and from your area. Wheat products, a lot of products come and go. So it's certainly not just the pilotage issue, but the river system itself.
I'm wondering more like, I don't think people really understand how large the Columbia is. Do you, when you're on the Columbia, do you have any sense of any sort of comparison to any other rivers or any other port systems that you can kind of give us an idea of the greatness of the Columbia?
Well, the Mississippi, of course, is always compared, but the Columbia River certainly is unique on the West Coast because of its size and the length to the furthest most port in Portland. So, yeah, I also have that discussion a lot of times with people who just, they don't understand that ship takes 8 hours from the ocean to berth sometimes. And, yeah, it's very big, and that's why the dredging issue that's been kicked around the last several years was something that was hard to comprehend because of the length. It's over 100 miles, and digging 3 feet out of 100 miles of mud is not a simple solution.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sarah Montes Anderson.
Thank you. Mr. DeVias, thank you so much. I don't think I've met you. Anyway, I do want to thank you for taking on this role, and I wish you the best of luck, and if there's any concerns or if you want to share some ideas, please feel free to contact me.
Thank you, Senator.
Anybody else? I think you're off the hook, Mr. DeVias. We really appreciate your time and energy, and the governor's office will keep you posted, and good luck.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate this this opportunity to be called rather than come down there because I've got a lot of other stuff on the burner this morning, so I thank you for this opportunity. Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
State Parks.
For the record, I happen to go to school with Mr. Chalfant. He was a year behind me. I would ask that you not hold that against him.
And, Madam Chair, just in the interest of full disclosure, my mother's administrative assistant was the chair of Mr. Chalfant's board at one time.
All right.
I just want to put that on the record.
I know, it's a little...
what was in the water?
This morning?
Your whole time.
Well, he moved from Kansas. I moved from Minnesota, so... Good morning.
Good morning. This is Brad Chalfant.
Hi, Kate Brown.
Good morning, Senator.
I've already disclosed our connections to the committee, and Senator Johnson has revealed hers. You're in front of a full complement of Senate Rules Committee members, including Senator Johnson, Senator Ted Farrioli, myself, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Lori Moniz Anderson. I would like to tell you that there's a committee room full of people just listening with bated breath to your testimony, but the truth is the governor's Nancy Gosteran is here. You should be forewarned, however, that you are being piped throughout the Capitol and that anything you say today may be used against you at any time. So, with that, would you please state your name for the record and tell us why you'd like to serve on the State Parks Board?
Good morning. My name is Brad Chalfont, and I am thrilled to be nominated to sit on the State Parks Commission. I've spent the years that I've been in Oregon, roughly 25 years, working to build stronger communities, conserve the landscape, really reinvest in Oregon, and I see the opportunity afforded me by this appointment, if in fact I'm confirmed, as just a huge step forward for me in terms of being able to give back to Oregon. I've been very blessed to be able to enjoy the fruits of the state, and I very much like to contribute back to the state.
We worked on a bill last session. I believe the bill number was House Bill 2187. Could you tell us a little bit about that and what that bill did?
We worked on the Community Forest Authority bill. It was an opportunity to give local communities the chance to acquire important productive timberlands. Generally speaking, we're talking county governments, setting up entity, quasi-independent entity that can issue municipal bonds to buy timberlands, timberlands that would otherwise likely be taken out of production and used for other purposes, but keep these timberlands in production, keep local logs being produced for local mills, and at the same time protect important wildlife habitats, scenic views, and recreation opportunities. That bill passed, I believe, 55 to zero in the House, and I believe it was 26-4 in the Senate. So it was supported quite broadly in a bipartisan manner. We had support from the forest industry, from conservation, from the unions, the counties. It was a real win-win, and my organization is now working to acquire perhaps as much as 300,000 acres that would likely come out of production were it not acquired in this manner.
Thank you. Questions from the committee. Senator Moniz Anderson.
Thank you, and thank you for being willing to serve on this commission. My question has to deal with the relationship of the State Parks Commission, and they say the state has lots of money for their parks. But I'm speaking for instance, Gresham lost several parks, had to close down several parks. And it's sad because so many people need to enjoy the fruits of their locality. Not always can they travel to state parks. Do you foresee at all, I'm so glad to see that your local and regional experience, I think, could offer a perspective and to the State Park Commission. Do you have any comments regarding the struggling cities and having to have very little money devoted to parks and recreation, which is, I think, very important in each locality also?
Senator, I would agree with your assessment. It varies, I think, probably across the state. There are certainly some jurisdictions that are probably doing better than others. I served several years on the budget committee for the Metro Park and Rec District, and so I'm quite familiar with their budgetary challenges. Certainly here in Central Oregon, it's become very expensive to acquire and develop new park sites to serve a very growing populace. I think it's absolutely critical that state parks help lead the way in terms of supporting and developing new ways for local park districts and cities, counties to provide those sorts of resources. You're quite right, not everyone has the opportunity to travel a great distance to some of our more magnificent state parks or even federal lands. It's important to have those accessible. It's obviously on a case-by-case basis. Each jurisdiction has its own unique challenges. But state parks really does have a role to play, and if state parks helps lead that effort, I think we can probably find some ways to help struggling jurisdictions address some of their unique issues.
Thank you.
Sir Nelson.
Yes, thank you. This is David Nelson. I live up in Pendleton. So natural resources is a really big issue in my viewpoint. And in my years serving in the Senate, one of the things that I've come to realize is that our ability as the legislature to fund public services is very much tied to our ability to use our natural resources. And in fact, if you go back to 1991 when our logging industry was basically starting its decline, we have not been able to fund public services to the extent that we should be funding them. It was covered up somewhat by the technology boom in the 1990s. But I think you have a unique position in what you're doing in your private life and also getting on this board to help carry that message forward. Sounds like you're really able to bring people together, and it seems like we're all trying to get to the same place. And I guess this is probably just more of a comment than a question, but it seems to me that if we're going to progress as a state, we're going to have some real strong balances between use of our natural resources and for development and use of natural resources for recreation and parks and that type of thing.
Senator, I couldn't agree more strongly, and as Senator Farrioli knows better than probably anyone, this state has truly been polarized ever since the spotted owl wars of the 1990s, and we need to find ways to bring communities back together. There is so much more that we share than divides folks, and the organization that I've been fortunate enough to work for has been quite successful in trying to bring people together. And I think state parks really has a strong role to play there. Recreation, the opportunities that folks have to get out and enjoy our landscape is something that we all share, and it's something that I think historically Oregonians have been quite proud of, and rightly so. And I think if we're going to build forward and we're going to start bridging some of those divides, we need to find ways to unite Oregonians, and finding ways to both deliver productive uses from our landscape as well as simply enjoying and appreciating that landscape we need to unite those things. They're not things that should be mutually exclusive.
Last session, the Oregon legislature, put the state fair under the auspices of state parks, and a number of us groaned, but I think it's fair to say the state fair was a pretty successful one this year. Any thoughts, any comments? You're not required to respond.
Well, I do have some thoughts on that. I think I probably would have groaned as you did when that happened. However, that being said, I think that the state fair, if managed well, can be a real asset for state parks, and frankly can help build alliances and strengthen the constituency for state parks. Now, if the state fair is poorly run, it can become a real liability, and more so than any other venue that the state park operates, it can become a liability very quickly. So it really puts it creates a huge challenge for not only the professionals at State Parks Department, but also the legislature to keep a real close eye on how that state fair operation is managed, because I've seen how county fairs can be managed and mismanaged, and they can be a real asset, but they can also very quickly become a real challenge.
Senator Johnson?
No.
Okay. Just for the record, is it fair to say that you have a good working relationship with Representative Chuck Burley?
That's correct.
Okay. I think you're off the hook on any further questions. We really appreciate your time and energy, and the governor's office will be in touch depending upon the outcomes of your potential appointment. So, thank you. Take care.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye-bye, Brad. Okay, next up. He worked with Chuck on that particular bill that we talked about.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
I knew.
What I was curious about is whether or not he had a relationship with Chuck during the... There was a relatively tumultuous period. You wouldn't think a park board would be a big deal. But
oh, I'm sure. No, I know he does. So, next up, Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Actions. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Going too fast. TSPC, Gordon Monk, and he is from Dave Nelson territory. Pilot Rock.
Man, another Nelson appointee.
Yeah. Yes. That's the teacher, Espanol. A map. Photography. Pretty interesting brain. Good morning, Mr. Monk.
Good morning.
Hi, Kate Brown, Rules Committee. You've got a full...
Kate.
How are you this morning?
I'm great.
Sun shining in Pilot Rock?
Well, a little cloud.
Okay. Yeah. You are here with a full complement of state senators, Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Ferrioli, myself, Senator Dave Nelson, and Senator Lori Moniz Anderson. There is, suffice to say, not a lot of folks in the hearing room, but you are being piped throughout the Capitol, so what you say can be used against you at any time in any way. So we just have a couple quick questions for you. Would ask that you state your name for the record and why you would like to serve as a member of the TS, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission.
My name is Gordon Monk, and I would like to serve on the commission because I have an interest in this, long-standing, stemming from fear as a young teacher, which has developed into an interest in what makes good teachers and improvement of education in Oregon, and I think that the commission promotes that in a very positive way.
If we made you king today, what three things would you do to improve Oregon schools?
Stabilize funding. And I'd like to see adequate, but stable would be great. I would make sure that we have some longevity in the programs, that higher education is asked to provide for teacher and administrator training. I think that too often changing the rules and expectations that those people have makes it very difficult for them to provide a quality program. Funding again.
Okay. All right. Other questions from the panel? Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Monk, for your willingness to serve on this board. I'm just curious how somebody makes it from being in microelectronic engineering with space and weapons application to Pilot Rock, Oregon. It feels a little like the witness protection program.
Well, I grew up here. I taught in Heppner for several years before I became disillusioned with education and went off to see what else I could do in life. Very honestly, my wife said, I'm going home. You can come if you want.
And anybody that does what their wife says is a yes vote for me. So that's
I think I see a new sort of funnel point for our boards and commissions appointees. Senator Montes Anderson, did you have anything?
No. Okay. Just very, very happy that you... we had a nice conversation the other day, Mr. Monk. Thank you for taking the time to do that. But I just want you to go forth and do good.
Okay.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, hi, Gordon. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you?
I just would like to get your views again on, you know, the difficulty in recruiting teachers and how do you maintain them in parts of rural Oregon.
Well, I think that's probably an important piece and why I'm interested in doing this. I've watched the commission from the audience point of view for the last 3 or 4 years. And it's important that we have a voice for minorities. It's important that we have a voice for large schools that are dealing with very diverse populations. But I think it's also important that the small schools that are really struggling in Oregon to maintain a teaching staff at all because of the declining numbers of students and that sort of thing also are represented. And I think that's probably what I represent best here.
Okay. Senator Farrelly.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Mr. Monk, I will join Senator Nelson in thanking you for, actually all the members of the panel, and thanking you for being willing to serve on this board. It's so important that a citizen serve, and I think even more important that we see citizens from the throughout the state of Oregon willing to join these boards and commissions. I have been meeting with the director of the Teacher Standards and Practices Department to ask her as a follow-up to testimony she delivered about 3 weeks ago in front of a committee to consider a requirement for relicensure of teachers that has to do with teacher competency as demonstrated by student performance. It isn't currently a requirement to be licensed or relicensed in the state of Oregon to demonstrate competency in the classroom. I wondered if you could comment on that, especially in terms of your professional background as an administrator in the education system.
Well, Senator Farrelly, I think that it's a pretty complex question and certainly driving toward high standards and producing a workforce that can serve in a technologically advanced age is an important thing. I think that you have to be very careful, though, especially when you're dealing with individuals. If you have 22 kids in your class and half of them are special education folks, it's going to be real hard to hold that teacher accountable that year for maintaining an average or a particular standard that is great and high. You know, not all those kids are going to get there. The schools can do quite a bit, but parental expectations or lack of parental expectations also have to be factored in that. And holding a teacher hostage, I guess, saying, well, it doesn't matter what you get, no child left behind works. I'm probably off in left field here a little bit, but I've watched great teachers really struggle with poor groups and try to make realistic progress. I think what ODE has implemented in the request, and I understood on NPR this morning that apparently the request has been granted by the federal government for allowing us to do a progress model rather than a solid standards model. I don't know much about where that is yet, but I think that's probably a realistic thing. But having an absolute solid standard concerns me because of the variability of students that a particular teacher might encounter one year or another.
Senator Farrelly.
Follow up?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Monk, I really appreciate the fact that you're sensitive to the difficulties that teachers face because they often have or almost always have no control over the class that they're assigned, the students that they receive from the previous grades. And I think that there has to be some sort of a mechanism for taking that factor into consideration when evaluating teachers. But on the other side of that equation, there are teachers who consistently have classes that that move through the system underprepared for success in the subsequent grades, and demonstrably they're less competent than their peers. Yet there's no entity that I know of, and no organizational or licensing mechanism that would say this is a person that really should not teach.
Mm-hmm.
We have Senate Bill 880. It's rarely, if ever, used. It requires a work plan and monitoring.
Sure.
It becomes a political battleground if it's implemented. But there is a place where all teachers need to go, and that is the teacher standards and practices for relicensing. And currently, if a teacher has no record of malfeasance or a breach of ethics or a breach of comportment, there really is no way for them essentially to have that license withheld.
Uh-huh.
And my point here is just to say to you as a new appointee, it's very high time that we had a discussion about competency in the classroom as an element of consideration for relicensure.
I would welcome that.
Well, I appreciate that. Thanks. And if you could convey our conversation to the TSPC director, I would appreciate that also.
Superintendent Monk, on the other side of the coin, I would like to say I appreciate your comments. I represent children in the foster care system, and I can't tell you the level of abuse and neglect over 8,000 children in this state have suffered at the hands of their parents, and extremely troubled that we would hold teachers accountable for children who come to school consistently with lice in their hair, unfed, dirty clothes, unbathed, and I can go on and on. So I also appreciate your willingness to see the other side of the coin. So any further questions for Superintendent Monk? Thank you. We think you're off the hook. We really appreciate your willingness to serve on the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. I suspect this is the beginning of an ongoing conversation, and we look forward to having it with you.
Thank you very much for
the
opportunity.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
All right. I think we have one more. Mr. Fleury, I think that's the right pronunciation.
I just think you have to come see some of the kids we're representing and the condition their parents send them through to school.
I mean, agree. I see those cases in my communities as well. I guess the point I'm saying, getting at, is that there ought to be a way to balance considerations like the one that you raised with the questions of competency that we answer today with longevity and educational attainment equals licensure.
Yeah, no. I think that part of it is administration unwillingness to hold teachers accountable. And I think
you're right.
There's got to be some responsibility.
And this is another pinch point.
Mr. Fleury.
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning.
On another tangent that frankly has nothing to do with our committee, but we appreciate your willingness to join us this morning. Did I say your last name right?
Yes, Fleury. That's
okay.
Right.
Could you please state your name for the record and tell us a little bit about why you'd like to serve on this commission. Just for your information, I have in front of you a full complement of Senate Rules Committee, starting with Senator Betsy Johnson, Senator Ted Farrelly, myself, Kate Brown, your Senator, Dave Nelson, Senator Lori Moniz Anderson, and you are being piped throughout the Capitol, so anything you could say today could be used against you. We don't know why it would be, but just for your information.
Okay,
so.
I understand.
So, for the record, your name.
My name is Nicholas Fleury.
And would you tell us a little bit about why you'd like to serve on the Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service, which I think is the longest board or commission name that we have?
I gathered that by looking at the list of commissions. My actual position is working with the AmeriCorps in through the Resource Assistance for Rural Environments program through the University of Oregon Community Service Center. So I'm interested because I've been serving with them for a year, and I'm continuing with the service. And I also served with Peace Corps for 4.5 years before I actually took on this position. My own interest in actually serving on the commission comes from actually working with other AmeriCorps volunteers, such as ones with the Portland Youth Builders in often Portland. And I'd be interested in working with actual programs that I see. And from the experience that I've had working with other AmeriCorps volunteers, I think it's a wonderful program that's actually being instilled. And I'd like to see more people interested in the program and also take an interest in the communities for AmeriCorps representatives to go into communities and actually volunteer their time and services.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? Sarah Nelson.
So thank you, Nicholas, and I appreciate your living and working and serving in Pendleton. I have a sense that there are some big changes going on in Pendleton and maybe all of rural America, maybe rural Oregon. Could you comment on that, what you're seeing?
For my own experiences working in Pendleton?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and also just kind of on a broader general, you know, what's happening in rural America?
From growing up in a smaller town, I've seen an actually a sort of a reduction in what I see as volunteer activities with people. There's less of an interest in actually coming with service organizations such as Elks Club and Rotary, and I don't necessarily understand why that is taking place at this time and moment, but a lot of times people just feel as if they don't have a vested interest in their own community, and if they just get involved, they can see there's really a lot of opportunities to take place in their environment. We've had some actual success in this area, at least with people volunteering for the projects that I'm working on. There's a downtown restoration program to restore the buildings in the downtown area, a walking tour brochure that's been issued, all of it done by volunteer work and then partly through my actually AmeriCorps project. So it's nice to see people get involved, willing to donate their time and really have an interest in the programs and see them moving forward. So with people getting involved, it seems that as long as people continue doing that, more people would be interested in actually serving with it, and it seems people will have a vested interest in their community and will be willing to contribute in the future.
Yeah. Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you. I really enjoyed reading your resume and actually your letter, and the fact that you have a forklift certification, and I'd like to know where you use that, and then your education, is it pedagogy? Your cross-culture and Kiswahili language training, that must have been the Peace Corps.
Yes.
And then your French Pidgin language training. Anyway, the fact that you listed all those, it's obvious that you will be a good asset to the commission and probably provide a perspective that no one else could. But what did you... I assume the forklift certification was what?
It was for when I was an auction manager up in Alaska.
Oh.
We ran the largest auction in the state. It's all industrial equipment, so we had to move light plants and compressors from one place to another.
So you know him?
I learned how to do that.
Oh. Okay.
That's great. I would have thought, well, you had to know how to do a forklift somewhere, you know, involving your
Peace Corps
work.
No, I didn't end up using a forklift there, but I did learn how to use one when I was working for Shopko. I worked in the receiving department. That was way back in high school, but most recently working on larger ones, actually up in Alaska for industrial equipment.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I guess you're off the hook. You're our last victim this morning, so.
I'm wondering about that since it gets towards 10 o'clock.
Yeah, you're off the hook from any more tough questions. We really appreciate your time. And oh, I spoke too soon, Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, not a question. I just wondered if Mr. Fleury would like to put a plug in for the Pendleton Underground Walking Tour.
Ah.
Oh, for the underground tours? Of course. If you get the chance to actually go on the Pendleton Underground tours, by all means, come out. And I am one of the tour guides. In fact, I have a tour leaving in 12 minutes.
Oh!
I'll have complimentary passes by the time you get out here. And I'll also make a plug for Senator Farioli's area to go to the Kamwa Chung Museum in John Bay. Very good, interesting Chinese history in that area.
Great.
Great.
And I assume you had a very successful Roundup Rodeo last week.
Yes, we were certainly busy around this town, but it was nice to see. That's a good example of how a whole community gets involved behind a rodeo. I mean, to pull off a 50,000-spectator rodeo with only 17,000 people in the city, it's It's quite remarkable. Great to see the Main Street Cowboys really do a great job in downtown.
I keep waiting for Senator Nelson to donate a horse for me to ride in the parade, but so far, no pony.
We have a buggy.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Fleury. We appreciate your willingness to serve on this commission.
Well, thank you very much, Senator Brown.
Take care.
All right. You too.
Bye.
Bye.
I know. It's just like these people are so bright and so talented. It's really scary. They should be running the legislature, not us. Okay. We just closed the public hearing for Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. I'm just going to buzz through the non-waived appointments, if that's okay. Does anybody have any objection to us carrying the all of the non-waived appointments in block? No objection to that. Would somebody like to carry those particular appointments? Senator Nelson, would you like to, since most of them are from... One of
yes,
you guys?
Make him do it. Yeah.
Okay, make him do it. Okay, we'll get him passed first. Don't worry. All right. I just don't normally ask, so just looking for volunteers. Okay. I'm opening a work session on the appointment of Melissa Ryan to the Land Use Board of Appeals. The chair would move the appointment of Melissa Ryan to LUBA with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none? So ordered. Opening a public here work session on the appointments of Jacob Polvey and W. Brian Wolf to the Energy Facility Siting Council, and I would move that those appointments to the Energy Facility Siting Council that the appointments be confirmed en bloc. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. All right. Open a work session on the appointment of Jack Mills to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board. I would move the appointment of Jack Mills to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? Not so ordered. Close the work session on Jack Mills. Open a work session on the appointment of Lisa Dodson to the Health Services Commission. I would move the appointment with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the public hearing. Open the public hearing on Nina Sobota to the Commission on Commission on Hispanic Affairs. I would move the appointment of Nina Sobota to the Commission on Hispanic Affairs with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Thank you. Close the work session on Nina Sobota. Opening a work session on Kenny DeVias, close enough, mm-hmm. to the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots. I would move the appointment of Kenny DeVias to the Oregon Board of Maritime Pilots with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close work session. Open a work session on Brad Chaffant to the State Parks and Recreation Commission. Move the appointment of Brad Chaffant to the State Parks and Recreation Commission that the recommendation by the Senate be confirmed. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the work session on Brad Chaffant. Open a work session on Gordon Monk to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Move the appointment of Gordon Monk with the recommendation that the appointment be confirmed of Gordon Monk to the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. Any discussion? So I appreciate our earlier discussion, Senator Farioli. Any further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the work session on Gordon Monk. Open the work session on Nicholas Fury to the Oregon Volunteers Commission for Voluntary Action and Service. Move that appointment with the recommendation that the Senate confirm that appointment. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Close the work session on Nicholas Fury. Okay, breathe. I'm going to open a work session for the consideration of the appointments to the following boards and commissions. Electrical and Elevator Board, Fair Dismissal Appeals Board, Land Conservation and Development Commission, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, Board of Naturopathic Examiners, Oregon Patient Safety Commission, Board of Directors.
I'm like, somebody...
I move that the appearances be waived and the following appointments and reappointments be moved to the Senate floor with the recommendation that they can be confirmed and block. The reappointment of Michael Broomfield to the Electrical and Elevator Board, the reappointment of Peggy Penland to the Fair Dismissal Appeals Board, the reappointment of John Van Lanningham to the Land Conservation and Development Commission, the reappointment of Robert Rice to the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, the reappointments of Elaine Gillespie and Rick Marinelli to the Board of Naturopathic Examiners, the reappointment of Susan King, Lewis McCoy, and David Wyden to the Oregon Patient Safety Commission Board of Directors. Any discussion? We should, for the record, note, I believe that Mr. Van Lanningham is married to Ms. Martha Walters. She was recently appointed by the governor to be on the Supreme Court, for the record. Any further discussion on those appointments? Any objection to those appointments? So ordered. Let's close the work session. Senator Nelson, would you like to carry the first and block appointments? That'd be great. Senator Farioli, you want to carry the second? You're like, no. Okay.
Not so much. Thank you.
All right. Senator Johnson, would you be willing to carry the second set of appointments?
Yes, ma'am.
The reappointments. Okay. We should have anything else to come before the committee? We should have a pretty, I think, I always say that and then I eat my words later, but I think we should have smooth sailing tomorrow. Okay. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
With that, we are adjourned. We will be in touch about the November meeting. Yours truly, unfortunately, has a trial scheduled that week, so we may need to do some rescheduling, and it may be a wild week anyway. So, see what we can do. Got a pre-trial.